Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we talk with writers about writing, and we have a really good time doing it. And sometimes I have people on my show that I feel like I've known for 20 years, but it's really only been closer to 10, as we've just determined. But I do feel like I've known you for a really long time because we've spent a lot of fun times together at conventions. My guest today is Marty Gwynn-Gate. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Sean.
Thank you for being here.
I'm delighted to chat with you. And even though no one else can see us, we can see each other, so that's good.
Yeah, and we've been smiling and reminiscing and catching up. And all right, Marty, can use an introduction. We'll get one anyway. USA Today bestselling author Marty Wingate shares her love of Britain in a number of mystery series. She lives with her husband and two cats near Seattle. She's a member of Sisters in Crime, Mystery Writers of America, and the CWA, which I was just talking about in the last episode, as well as the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds and the Royal Horticulture Society. She has her own modest vintage collection of books from the Golden Age writers. She takes her research seriously. She's a former how-to garden writer of three books and countless number, at least she stopped counting ages ago, of magazine and newspaper articles on everything from apple maggot to the prettiest daffodils and the best smelling roses. You could probably use apple maggot and a mystery.
Oh,
So it
yeah.
sounds mysterious. Research took on an entirely new light when she began writing mysteries. And now she and her husband travel regularly to England and Scotland, where she plunges deeply into study concerning the next adventure, sparing not a few minutes a day to the pub. My kind of gal. Very, very cool. So you've written a million books. Which ones are we about going to talk to you about today?
Well, the exciting news for this week is that my new series, The London Ladies Murder Club, debuts on January 11. Two books out at the same time. The books are ebook, print, and audio. Oh, we have a fabulous reader. And I'm very excited about that. I've written cozy mysteries. I've written a couple of standalone historicals that are not mysteries, but now I'm writing cozy historical mysteries. So I'm just blending it all together.
Yeah, and they're fun. They have fun covers, and it looks like just the premise sounds fun. The Ladies Murder Club, that sounds cool. And I was remarking to you before we started recording that you have two coming out on the same day too. And I at first I thought they were reissues. No, they're not reissues. And then I thought, oh, they're obviously novellas because they can't. How can she write two books? No, they're full length books.
How can
It's
she
like.
write a book? That's what I'm asking myself. Yes, two, but the publisher decided that they've done this before with other series, and it's a great way to get the series kickstarted because, especially for ebook readers, when you get to the end of the book, there's buy the next book. So tomorrow or on January 11, A Body on the Doorstep comes out. That's book one in the London Ladies Murder Club, and A Body at the Seance. And these are set in London in 1921. And so spiritualism and holding seances and all that stuff was really, really popular. So I had a great time researching that, but researching them all. I love research.
I can hear that, and it's but it's just I mean it's a lot of words to write to get it's hard to get one book ready for publication, much less two coinciding. It sounds like a really cool concept, and I love that you're doing it. It's just I'm thinking of physically writing this book. Was it
Well,
taken? It was just hard, right?
exactly. Fortunately, when I signed the contract, my agent negotiated the contract so that I had a longer lead time for the books than you would normally get. And so I can pretty much write a book in 6 months. So I wrote both of those last year. And now I'm working on number three. So it's not too bad. I have great editors, they're very careful and encouraging at Bookature. That's my publisher for this series, and they love the idea of I'll just wander on and talk about the books. How's that? The books are based on the very real Useful Women Agency that was on at number 48 Dover Street, just off Piccadilly in London in the 1920s. And Miss Lillian Carr was the proprietress, and she had there I've got newspaper articles and her ads that she would put in the papers what she wanted to do was to provide a range of services to households that may not be able to afford an entire staff any longer. You know, think of Downton Abbey when the times were changing and they used to have 20 footmen out in front of the house, and now then they had three or four staff. And so Lillian Carr, the real Lillian Carr, had booklet number 8 that listed 99 different jobs her useful women could do. So these are all, it's like a temp agency. And it was everything from polishing the silver to repairing antiques to cataloging libraries to taking visitors around London. And the 99th job in booklet number 8 was private investigation. And when I saw that, I thought, oh my. And I told my agent and she said, right, start writing.
That is so good. I love that. I love that premise. That is, I mean, we're useful all the time, but it's just funny to have a business like called Useful Women. Very, that's awesome. I love it. That's just, it makes you want to pick up the book, which we're all going to do tomorrow. Number one question, even though we've been chatting, you love England. We can see, we can tell that you're oozing England. When did your love of England begin, and what sustains it?
Oh my gosh. I can't, you know, all my life I remember being a loving Ireland, first of all. And I spent, my girlfriend and I spent one entire summer when we were 13 planning our first trip to Ireland. And she didn't go. She got married instead, but I went to Ireland. And it ended up, I ended up moving to Dublin for a couple of years and working there. Many years ago, but it meant a lot of traveling through England as well. And so I love both Ireland and England as well as Scotland. But my husband and I started traveling over to England in the mid 90s. And we pretty much go every year. We'll go twice a year if we possibly can. And it's we've got to the point where we don't dash around trying to see a million different things. We just like to be. So we go to some of the same places, and we feel like, we have a friend who lives in Bybury in a Cotswold village, beautiful chocolate box village, as they would say over there. And we visit her so often that some people think we live there. And we think, go ahead. It's just, we enjoy the history. We really enjoy the history. My husband's a journalist, and you know, people who live with words. he loves the newspapers over there. He loves the English ale. I love going out for, you know, the fact that we're walking a lot, of course, helps, but it's always nice to stop for tea and cake somewhere. So it's really fun. And I have a in the past led garden tours to England too. So
yeah, well, that sounds lovely. And I think you should buy a house there and live there part of the year.
I think we should too. Let's see how this new series goes. Maybe I'll be able to buy a house.
And invite me over and I will come and stay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you managed to write 2 books, as we uncover. You write a lot and you've written a lot of things. Are you writing 2 different things at the same time, or is this your focus, this series now?
Right now, this is my focus. I did, when my first series, the Potting Shed Mysteries, were re-released starting in September of last year, I had written, I had 7 books with Alibi, which was the ebook only imprint from Random House. You know, when all of the big places were thinking, we're going to have an ebook only imprint. And that went on for a couple of years and then it dissolved. And I had written number 8 in the Potting Shed series, but Alibi was no more. So I published that myself. And so that got hoovered up in the re-release too. So that's the last Potting Shed I wrote. I wrote a Christmas short story too, but there are always ideas. You know, this is the case, Sean. There are always ideas on the back burner in your mind, just simmering away, waiting for their chance.
Absolutely. Well, you already answered my third question in one of your other statements. I'm not going to ask it, but I always have backup ones. I always have backups because I'm a professional interviewer.
Right.
I would like to know, I've known you for a while, but I would like to know how your fictional writing career got started. I don't think I know your origin story.
Oh, yeah. Well, As I said, I was a garden writer. And actually, as I believe many, many writers, this is the case with many, many writers, I have a lot back there, a lot of other stuff I used to do. I used to be a speech therapist. And in fact, when I moved to Dublin, I worked at a rehab center there with children with cerebral palsy on speech and language. And then, let's see, when I moved to Seattle, I was a speech therapist. But then I started taking classes and I became a master gardener, volunteer master gardener. And that just sort of... Then I got a master's degree in urban horticulture, and I began writing garden things. So I wrote for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer as a freelancer. That was one of our two daily papers here, gone, sadly. And I started writing for magazines, and I had three how-to garden books out, and the PI went under. Well, went online. But there was no print and there was no garden section anymore, which was really too bad. And so I was commiserating with a friend of mine over tea and cake at our local big indie bookstore, Third Place. And she said to me one day, because I would, you know, we would always look for the big posters of authors coming. And I can't remember whose poster. Well, there were always mystery posters. And I was always interested in those because I read a lot of mysteries. And so my friend Mary said, you know, you should write a garden mystery. And I said, I don't write fiction. I wouldn't know how to write fiction. I know how to write how to. It has to be truth, you know. So she was quiet about it for a while. And then she brought it up again. And then after a while, she brought it up again. And so it's my friend Mary that did this. And so one day I walked in and I saw another, I can't even tell you which one it was now, but it was a cozy author and it was a themed series. Because that's what we like. You know, we look for the things that we like. And I thought, and it wasn't gardening, but I thought, well, you know, if there can be that kind of series, there could be a gardening series. So I started writing, and I swear I don't know where these people come from. I don't know how you feel. Sometimes, Sean, don't you? You look for, I need a character that blah, blah, blah. But sometimes they're just there. And these characters appeared, and I started writing, and I joined a writing group, and I'm still in that writing group. We meet every week. We're on Zoom now, but we used to meet in person. And that's been since 2011, and they are invaluable. It's like my first editor, Dana, said, it's like having a table full of editors around you. And I think I was working on my third book when I got my first contract for the Potting Shed series. And it just, and then I was writing another and the editor said, oh, it's outdoors, it's gardening. Said you have a lot about birds in there. You wouldn't be interested in writing a bird series about birds, would you? Sure. So I'm so suggestible. It's amazing. So that's how it started.
Well, thank you, Mary. We appreciate your prodding and whoever that is. But yeah, there's like, you know, cake mysteries and cartography mystery. I mean, you know, there's a theme and there's a exactly. Call them the craft setting or whatever it is. But
there are catering mysteries.
Yes, there are. There are lots of those, so yep. Not too many movie set catering on this. That's why I chose that, because I'd seen a lot of, because I love Catherine Hall Page and, you know, big fan of a lot of the culinary mysteries, but I hadn't seen a movie set one. And I was, you know, I'd done that job. So I was like, oh, I could probably infuse some, but again, when I wrote it, I didn't realize that that's what I was writing. I thought I was writing a movie. I thought I was writing a book about movies. And my publisher was like, oh, this is a culinary. I'm like, oh yeah, she is a chef.
Right. Oh, okay.
But you don't, sometimes you just fall into it. You don't have no idea. You don't really have a clear direction at the beginning is the whole point of this conversation. Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you did, because we love your books. And if you know everything about gardening, I mean, there you go.
All of the horticulture. Now this is, I'm sure it's this way for anyone who knows a lot about a subject, but for gardeners who read fiction and to have the author gets something wrong is so infuriating. So I'd like to say that all of the gardening information in the Potting Shed Mysteries is correct.
Yes, I do not doubt that. You seem like you're like the librarian in the school farm all rolled into one. So speaking of research, it's this kind of dovetails into that. You love research. not everyone does. Research can be, I mean, obviously you go above and beyond for your research. What's the process like? Is it how long does it take you? Do you just do it all the time? Or is there like, you cut yourself off and it's like, all right, now I'm just going to start writing. Like, what is the appeal of research, and why do you, how does it fold into your writing life?
Well, I think it's just knowing stuff, and it's the household, isn't, you know, my husband, Leighton, we're the same way. And my family was the family I grew up with the same way. We love trivia. So I do love research, and I do have to restrain myself from telling my readers the history of the envelope or the history of the flashbulb. Flashbulbs, I don't have any flashbulbs at the beginning of the 20s. I would like to tell you that. So it's the old flash tray, you know.
The thing that used to light up on fire, like it sparked, like in the movies. I've seen it in the movies.
Exactly. Yes, that has been useful in some of my stories. And so I do it all the time. I probably shouldn't do it all the time. It's too easy to do it all the time when you're writing on your computer. Oh, let me just look this up. But then I also, on the side, have, you know, we'll find the books to read. I was reading books about the polio epidemic for the Orphans of Mercy House, one of my standalones, and stuff like that. Visiting, of course, that's part of the research, visiting places. I walked down to number 48 Dover Street, just off Piccadilly, to see where the Useful Women office was. It's a different building now, sadly. I have go-to places online. I have subscribed to the British newspaper archive from the British Library because all of the newspapers are there. And so then what happens is I think, did they call them camisoles in the early 1920s? Let me just see. So I go on the newspaper archive, and it's worth its weight in gold, and look up camisoles, and I find some ads for women's camisoles in the early 20s. And then I see an article beside one of the ads about something, and I read that and I think, oh, I wonder if I could go, oh my gosh. So there is that constant research going on. I just have requested a book at the library about, this is about a woman who was Indian and grew up in England, about, and she was a suffragette. So I'm writing a book about suffragettes now. So I have to read about Princess Sophia now.
That is so cool. Well, and I think the constant learning, you know, like I said, you remind me of teacher. You remind me of a teacher and a librarian rolled into one, because you're just, it feels, I know you're very thirsty for learning and like in teaching, but not in the, it's in an entertaining way. Like we're reading your books and we're learning, but we're not being taught, if that makes any sense. So I love that.
Good.
And it's funny because I've talked to other writers. One of our writers, she was reading a newspaper article about a trial that took place in the 1800s in New York. And on the other side was a story about a gigantic fire that she had never heard of. And she's like, how come we all heard of the triangle shirt, but we never heard of this one where multiple people? So she's based a story on that article that she never would have even found had she not been looking for that other thing. So it just leads us to where the new stuff. It's amazing. Old newspapers are awesome to look things up, even from like the 70s. It's like, whoa, they used to talk like that.
How embarrassing.
Wouldn't get away with that today.
No.
Cool. So anyway, tell us, I want to know more about these characters, these new people we're about to meet in the series. Can you tell us who your character, who's the main character, who's the other characters? Tell us what's going on with these people.
Well, the main character, you know, we always need someone who has had a sudden change in their life or something, an impetus to begin the story with the main character. The main character in the London Ladies Murder Club is Mabel Canning, and she's 32. She's from a little village called Peasmarsh, which is in Sussex. It's south of London, not very far south. And she's lived with her father, who's a greengrocer, and her mother died when she was a baby. She was born in India, but came back as an infant back to London. And on their journey, a lot of British families would hire ayahs, nannies, Indian nannies, to take the journey back with them to take care of the children on the ship. And then often these ayahs would have another family book them and then make the return journey to India. And I, in my head, I thought, well, what if that Aya stayed? Because there's no mother. She, Mabel's mother is gone. And so I think I'll have her stay and she can become the housekeeper. So then I start getting questions from my writing group. Are you sure that that's a... one of the women in my writing group is from outside of Bangalore. So it's just great. I can run. So Meg has just been so helpful with Mrs. Chandekar. That's the name of the Canning's housekeeper who came back with them. And so I figure if I can find one example of someone, you know, then I can say, yeah, because look, and I did. I have found more than one Aya who had gone back with a English family and then stayed with them. Mrs. Chandekar stayed as their housekeeper. So Mabel has this, she's a very independent streak, but she lives at home. It's the 20s, you know, she's not married, early 20s, just after World War I. And what was a woman's role except in the cities? Well, then she sees her chance when she sees Miss Carr's advertisement for useful women. She can move up to London. She can be an independent woman. Thoroughly modern Millie, for those of us who remember the Julie Andrews movie. I love that movie. I got a hold of a reprint of a book from 1916 called The Bachelorette's Guide to Living or to Life or something like that. And this woman, everything is where you can live, how much money you need to save, what things cost. So I based a lot of Mabel's ability to live in London on this book. It's just great. So Mabel lives in Islington, which is London. And she lives in a purpose-built block of flats, apartments. They're not serviced. Those would be sort of higher up the scale where somebody comes in and cleans your apartment for you, and those would be bigger places. But she lives in a building that has a sitting room, a kitchen, possibly not much bigger than an alcove, her own bedroom, and her own bathroom, which is pretty shocking. She's not, you know. Then there's the possibility a lot of women lived in boarding houses when they were working. They would live in rooms where they were split, so it would be like you'd have a roommate. And of course, meals downstairs and all that. Nope. Mabel's living in an actual flat and with piped in gas, mind you. She doesn't have a coal fire. So this is just fabulous. She goes for a job in A Body on the Doorstep, where she is helping out with a memorial for this woman's husband who had died 7 years before, but he'd gone missing. A body was never recovered. And so finally, at 7 years, they can declare him dead. So she's helping out, serving, you know, just kind of being a general, you know, useful woman. And there's the front doorbell is pulled and she goes to answer it and a man falls at her feet dead. So there we are. Mabel ends up very quickly finding friends that she can help her. This becomes sort of what the core of the London Ladies Murder Club. She asks Miss Carr if she can employ one or two useful women that might have a skill that she could use in helping figure out who this man was. Nobody knows, no identification. What it might have to do with the husband who's finally been declared dead. She gets to know two women, a couple who live the floor above her, Cora and Skeff. Cora Portjoy and Skeff. Skeff goes by only one name because her first name is actually Hippolyta and she doesn't want anybody to know that, who is a newspaper woman. Her uncle Pitt runs a newspaper in London. Newspapers, yay! So they are invaluable. Cora designs hats and is always making up designs for Mabel. And then she gets involved with the widow's. She encounters the widow's brother, who is sometimes some help. And he has a terrier, because we like animals in our books. He has a terrier named Gladys. Gladys is an Airedale. And are you familiar with, Airedales are not little dogs. They're about 2 feet high and they brown with a darker saddle-like marking on them. And they were very popular in the First World War. And so he's got Gladys. So there we are. We've set up everybody for the London Ladies Murder Club.
They sound like a fun group. They sound like they have a lot going on, and it's gonna be. I love the apartment. I would live there. I lived in something similar when I moved to New York. Little space.
That's
Just my little
right.
thing. I had a little Barbie-sized oven. I had all the stuff. And you feel independent when you have your own place for the first time. It's lovely. So, well, that's great. Well, I can't wait. It's gonna be fun. I can just tell. And then I think that one of the covers has the Airedale on the dog is on the cover, right? Or is that it? I might
Yes,
get a
the
that.
Airedales are actually, so this they're great covers. I love them. Gladys is actually a little browner than that, and possibly a tiny bit bigger. But yes, there is a dog on the cover.
I saw that. I'm like, okay, here we go. There's a dog. That's good. All right. Well, so you did great on the five questions. We do put you through a quiz. You have to do it. All right. Number one, do you prefer reading standalone novels or series?
Yes.
Good answer. We're sticking with that. See, you're the smart one. Number two, do you prefer reading books set in contemporary times or historicals?
Historical. But remember, the 70s are historical now, so there you are.
I resemble that remark. I was born in the early 70s. I'm just kidding, but it is weird because it's like I remember somebody said to me the other day in the early 20s, and they're talking about like now. And I started laughing. I was like,
Early 20s, yeah.
yeah, we started doing this in the early 20s. I'm like, lap dancing? What do you mean? What do you mean? I'm like, oh, now. Oh, okay. Because I'm used to early 20s from like, Fitzgerald
Restrained.
times. Okay, do you prefer to write in the mornings or the evenings?
Morning.
Okay, that's a pretty common answer. There's only been four so far this year, so
Yeah.
I'm studying trends among writers. Would you rather watch a movie or a TV show?
Movie.
Yeah. Okay. An old movie or a current movie or at the theater?
Sometimes the British shows are as long as a movie. They'll be an hour and a half. So I include those, like Inspector Lewis and all those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, I put one of those on. I put like a Midsummer Murder on, and I make dinner on Sunday, and it's like the show's over and dinner's ready. Copy like 45. There's no commercials. If you could have dinner with any author, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh dear.
Bumper.
Barbara Pym. British, writer from the 50s mostly. One of my standalones is set in 1957. Also, that was difficult for me to call historical. In Suffolk in the east on the east coast of Britain, and I was reading Barbara Pym books to get in the mood, and I enjoy them.
Yeah, I actually know who that is. That would be fun to, I think you guys would talk all night about things. So the books come out tomorrow. Are you planning any parties? Are you going on tour? Is your writing group throwing you a big surprise party? What's happening?
I am fortunately, my publisher arranged the blog tour, so there will be a blog tour kicking off, and I will get online and watch my rankings. No, don't do that. Don't do it. But you can't help it. And so other than that, we could pop open a bottle of Prosecco or something and celebrate. That would be nice.
Yeah, and then depending on how your rankings go, drink the whole thing or
Yeah.
open a second one. I don't know. You all do it. You all do it. I'm a publisher, and I realize that this is a thing. It's like watching your stats go up on, American Idol or something. Well, that's exciting. So, where can people find you and follow you?
They can find me at my website, martywingut.com. I am on Facebook. That is really, I am one of those. I'm on Facebook. And Marty Wingut Author is my author page. And I do enjoy that. I have this conversation with a friend. She said, she says, I need to get back on Facebook. It's just that Facebook takes, and I always fill in the rest of it for her, too much time. Yes, it does. Because there are stories. There's more than just one quick little snippet. And I think that's why I like it. So find me on Facebook.
She's there. Right. That's how we connected to do the show. Because I put a post and you saw it and you're like, I was like, hey, well, I should have had you on the show a long time ago. So we'll do that. So thank you for being here. I'm wishing you all the best with the new series. And I see that the third one's coming out like pretty soon too. So everyone should jump on this. I always think jumping on the train when it's first leaving the station. And this is the perfect opportunity to do that. Sometimes you like find a series like, oh, this is book 20. Oh my God, I have so much homework.
That's now hard. You're like, well, thank you, Sean. I really enjoyed this. This was great. Thanks.
Oh, thanks for being here. And I hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay.